You're listening to Fan of a Fan, an independently produced podcast for stans by stans. I'm Kayla.
And I'm Augie. All right, y'all. So we are back again. Apologies for the mini hiatus, but, you know, schedules and life and stuff happen. Mm-hmm. But important thing is we're back, and this week we are talking about K-pop, which, if you don't know what that is, you may be familiar, maybe slightly. It's Korean pop, that whole, but it refers to, like, the entire industry and, like, just there's a lot to discuss here, and we are just going to talk about it this week, try to pick apart the things that we do know about it, maybe discuss things we're not so familiar about this world, and just kind of, like, you know, discuss, like, what makes it so big, what makes it so popular, what makes it kind of, like, problematic at times. And so, Kay, you're gonna kick it off for us because you have a story. which I should preface by saying, okay, so one thing you should know, listeners, about the K-pop world is that the stans in this industry, like, are pretty much why the word stan was invented. Like, they go fucking hard. Like, you lump them in with, like, Brazilian stans. Brazilians. And
yes.
And these are, which means, like, you know, that's like a top tier level of fandom that, you mm-hmm. know, not everyone makes it that far because it's very intense and it's all consuming. And we've been wanting to do this episode for a while because it is so intense and that is such a very special and unique kind of fandom. So Kayla, you have a story about how you almost got, like, fully sucked into this world. And I feel like we should kick off the conversation by letting you tell that story. So what exactly okay. happened? I haven't even heard the details of this, so I'm excited to hear it.
Yeah, because I don't talk about it. But I almost got sucked into the wormhole of K-pop. But there was one thing that kind of, like, seriously rubbed me the wrong way, mm-hmm. and it made me stray away from it, like, almost completely, but I'll get into that, like, later. Mm-hmm. But I kind of started with seeing K-pop videos, like, in the recommended tab on YouTube. You know, when you get sucked in YouTube and you started watching vlogs, and then the next moment you're watching, like, natural birth videos. That's kind of how it was for me.
It's a rabbit hole.
Yes, that's kind of how it was with me for K-pop. I think I was just watching random music videos, and I saw some stuff on the side, and, you know, you can see the views, and you'd see, like, hundreds of millions of views on these videos. I'm like, well, what is this then? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so clicked on it, and I want to say the first, like, K-pop song I ever heard was a song by Girls' Generation. I don't remember the name, mm-hmm. but the video was, like, really, like, poppy and
like bubblegum pop.
Yes, bubblegum pop to a T. Everything was pink, like, it was like 30 girls. It was crazy. So after that, like, I didn't really watch anything after that, but I think a little bit, like, after maybe a couple months or so, I found a song called Call Me Baby by EXO. Mm-hmm. And that is a boy group, a K-pop boy group, and they're pretty huge, right? And so mm-hmm. I watched that, and I listened to that song, and I'm like, oh my God, I love this song so much. Don't really know what they're saying, mm-hmm. but I really loved the video, the dancing, like, everything. I was like, oh, this is really tight. So, and after that, I saw another song called Something by Girls Day. And to this day, this is my song. But still, I did not know what they were saying. You know, I didn't really, like, super get it. You know, I only listen to music in English pretty much. That's the only language I really, you know, speak. I mean, I've listened to Spanish music here and there, and I think that's why I was kind of like, well, let me just try it, because it's like, it's not like I've never listened to music in a language that I don't really understand. If I vibe with it, I vibe with it, whatever. So, so Call Me Baby and Something were the first two songs that I was, like, kind of obsessed with. And I remember watching, they do a lot of, like, dance practice videos, and they do a million performances of the same songs, like, over and over and over again at these different, like, I don't know, it's like almost like a talent show almost. Mm-hmm. And you win awards and stuff. So, like, I'd see these performances all the time, and I just loved it. Mm-hmm. But This was before there was a huge K-pop shift on like Stan Twitter and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I never really had anybody to talk about it with. And so I just kind of ignored it again. But when I started seeing more people talk about it, that's when I was like, okay, let me try it again for the third time. And so the third time's a charm. the third time, I saw a lot of BTS. That's the group that we're seeing in America right now. Mm-hmm. They had like the number one song on iTunes for a couple days last week or something like that. It's probably still in the top 10 because their fans go that hard. Mm-hmm. They were just at the, what was the last award show? The American Music Awards. Yep. They performed. Yep. Like, that's crazy, by the way. But so yeah, we've seen, they were just on Ellen. So we've seen them in the States or whatever. So that was the group that I saw a lot of people talk about. And so I looked into them while low-key still kind of like standing EXO on the side. And BTS was the group that almost sucked me in. And let me tell y'all why and how. So pretty much like K-pop artists do these like variety shows. And mm-hmm. there's just a whole bunch of content.
It's
and
like so a full-on world. It's not just music. Which yeah. is like an important like thing to remember when you're thinking about the fact that the groups and the solo artists in this industry, like, they're part mm-hmm. of a real machine. Like, we call the music industry in the U.S. a machine, but over there it's like it's yeah. it's like robotic to the point where like it's not yes. healthy for anyone involved.
Yes. So pretty much and this is one of the reasons why I think people like it in general is because you get so much content. Mm-hmm. From a Western artist, you may get, I mean, and this is when a Western artist is being generous, you may get an album a year. Whereas with them, you can get two or three like mini albums in 1 year, four or five videos. Sometimes you'll get three videos of the same song. They do all of these different concepts and they change their hair often. It's like everything a stan wants, like it's stan world utopia. And I think that's why so many people like, you know, get hooked on it is because it's just so much. Like people who are willing to put in the work and be a stan to the 10th degree, K-pop is what you need to get into mm-hmm. because you will never be bored. I don't right. think there's a way you could ever be bored as a K-pop stan. And so that's kind of how I was watching interviews and watching them do these little variety shows. And it was like all really new. And so what kind of turned me off from it was a friend of mine, she told me, she was like, well, if you're going to get into BTS, the group specifically, you should watch this show that they did called American Hustle Life. I think that was the name, American Hustle Life. And pretty much what that was they came to America to learn about hip hop because they do more rap than singing, mm-hmm. this group. And so they rap and dance. And so they came to America to learn about hip hop. So the first thing was that they got Coolio, the rapper from the 80s and 90s, to be their like hip hop coach. First of all, when's the last time you saw fucking Coolio? Like
never.
So I think the last time I saw Coolio was like on an episode of Sister Sister like a decade ago. So, you know, that was weird already. And then Coolio had his entourage. And so it was like Coolio and his entourage kind of teaching them how to do hip hop, but like the intentions were good, but it almost felt like a how to be a nigga class. Mm. And so they were like in California, and they did like all these different challenges and stuff. And some stuff was cute, and they, you know, it was about bonding. A lot of it was about bonding, but they also wanted to kind of learn about the history of hip hop, but they didn't really get into that too much. It was more so like a challenge type thing or whatever. I don't know. It got kind of weird. Like I was watching it. I'm like, oh, this is cute. They're trying to learn about the music that they're making since they know nothing about it. And then I guess the culture as a whole. But it just, the intentions were good, but it was not executed well. Mm. And so it was cringy to me. And so I asked my friend, I'm like, why did you ask me to watch that? Because I'm like, now I don't really like it as much anymore.
Right.
Because it felt like, you know, people overuse cultural appropriation, but that's what it was. Like, it was just so blatantly like I said earlier, just like how to be a nigga. That's what it mm-hmm. felt like. Mm-hmm. And so I know that's going to make people mad, but that's what it felt like to me. And so that's kind of what made me fall back from it. And so since then, I've kind of, like, after that, I completely stopped watching interviews and all these different things, I like unfollowed them all because it just made me uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And so now I still kind of listen to K-pop music, but it's really just listening to the music. I don't really get into the groups anymore. I don't know any of their names anymore and all these different things. But yeah, there was a smooth like maybe 6-ish months where I was like really into K-pop. Like if you're an OG follower on Twitter, you remember when I was like really in love with Jimin from BTS or
that's
whatever.
That's so interesting and, to me.
Yeah, and so like I fell back from it so hard. I was like, I don't like this. And I think on top of that, it was just the fact that it was too hard to be a fan. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm lazy as fuck. Like, I'm used to my Western artists giving me stuff every once in a while. And meaning, like, I don't have to be a full-on stan at all the time. You don't log on to Twitter for a day and you miss 10 things as mm-hmm. a K-pop stan. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like, I just didn't have the time. Like, I didn't have the time or the patience. Because another thing is, like I said, none of them speak, well, a lot of them don't speak English. So you watch an interview, you have to wait until someone does subtitles. You can't just watch it when it comes out, like the people who understand Korean. You have to wait maybe a day, 2 days, you know, it depends on how fast people do it. And people aren't getting paid to do that. They mm-hmm. do it because they know both languages and they do it, you know, out of the kindness of their hearts. So it was just a lot. And yeah. People who stan K-pop, you have like you said, like they are the top level stands. Mm-hmm. They put in the work to do it. And it's just, so yeah, that's my story of how I kind of like got into K-pop and was completely turned off by it.
No, I mean, it's crazy. One question I have for you is just like, and the thing is, I definitely have come across plenty of people who don't speak Korean who are into K-pop. And I just want to know, like at least my experience with K-pop, I feel like I came across it more when I was hardcore into Tumblr is more mm-hmm. just simply because I would follow people who would just like constantly reblog their favorite K-pop artists. But I never really sought it out. But like last year I had a coworker who she was just like really trying to put me on to K-pop. And so she was like, I'm going to mm-hmm. make you a playlist. You should listen to this. And I remember just like listening to it and the playlist she put together, like I couldn't understand anything obviously because it was all in Korean. But what really struck me was like the production. You know, and like what so kept good. Me listening to it for as long as I did was just like it sounded like all of my favorite late 90s to mid 2000s songs that I would listen to, like, you know, by American and like mm-hmm. British artists or whatever. But like I never got into it farther than that. So I just wonder, like, my question for you is like, what is it that kind of pulls you into just, you know, following the artist for even as long as you did, like, and listening to the music for like the way that you do? Is it the production?
Honestly, it was probably the fact that, like, it sounded like something I heard mm-hmm. before. And so it was kind of, like, almost nostalgia, but, like, in repackaged. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I want to say that's what it was. Because, I mean, that's the thing with K-pop. It's, like, none of it is really new. You know what I mean? The sound, none of it is really new. I mean, they give you, like, in terms of visuals and things like that, you can get, like, you get new concepts and things like that. They are very creative. But in terms of the music side, it's a lot of stuff you've heard from Western artists before. Just, like I said, repackaged.
I definitely picked up on that.
And so I think, yeah, so I think it was, like, I think it was just me being, like, oh, well, I've kind of heard this before. This isn't a new style of music that I haven't heard, and so I'm just gonna check it out in the Korean form.
Yeah, it's like different and unique enough to be interesting, but right. It's not necessarily like what they're doing is anything. It's not like it's this completely different brand new thing that we've never experienced. It's just kind of like in Korean, and you know, the production is such that, like, and the visuals also are such that, like, it keeps you in, you know? And it's, like, the everything we like best about Western artists, but you get, like, 10 times the content and stuff. And as a fan, that is huge. Yeah. But that's, like, to me, it's just crazy to watch from the outside looking in. Just mm-hmm. because, like, I never really got into it. But, like, as I was, like, doing research for this episode and just kind of, like, trying to like pick up on different parts of like the music and the industry and everything, I came across a lot of just like really troubling information. And there's just like a lot of problematic shit that goes on both like with the groups themselves and what they put out. Everything from like mm-hmm. blackface or just like you said, cultural appropriation. It feels uncomfortable to kind of like use that in the context, especially when you're talking about like, I don't know, like it definitely is like overused. But I mean, a lot of these groups are performing like hip hop songs, quote unquote, or like rap, and you're just like, that's a very culturally specific thing. And sometimes, not to say that like, you know, only Black people are ever allowed to like do like hip hop or rap or whatever, but also it seems like so put on, like this is, look at those cool Black people kind of thing, and then like we want to dress like them. And like you said with the whole Coolio thing, like it definitely, that makes me uncomfortable. But then on the behind the scenes part, I came across this thing called slave contracts, which really like made me uncomfortable, which basically is like referring to how these like giant music agencies or whatever in like South Korea will pretty much like recruit like 12 and 13 year old kids and like take them out of school. They'll control their diet. They make them live in dormitories, like isolated from people. And basically it's like they have to train to be a pop star. And like there was a point where like they would have these kids under like 13 year contracts. Like, you know, and I think, like, the laws have changed so that, you know, they can't make the contracts nearly that long. But, like, we get upset when we think about people like Tinashe and Elle Varner, you know, for example, who are stuck in really shitty contracts. But, like, imagine being stuck in, like, a 13-year contract from the age of, like, 12 to 26 or whenever. And, like, being literally, like, tortured almost with like someone controlling your diet and making you do all these crazy regimented things, and you're not even guaranteed to become famous. Like these are things they do, and like some of them, yes, they go on to be famous pop stars, but like some of them they just are like, well, that was a good try, but sorry we ruined your life and now go do something else. Like it sounds like so intense, and you know, on one side it just sounds disgusting and like something that should never be done, but on the other end it's like, is that part of why it's such a big booming industry? Because like they do work these people nonstop, and if that is like, if it's rooted in this like mistreatment of like really really young people, like that is something I just feel like not enough people are really talking about. But also, I'm not as plugged into that world, so maybe they are talking about it and I'm just not, like, aware. I don't know. But that was something that I came across that I was just like, what the fuck are they doing over there? Like,
so with the slave contracts, it's like, okay, like you said, they get people when they're really young, 12, 13, whatever. But to me, it like, when I was kind of in the world, I felt like no one talked about it. Like, it was like one of those things where it's like people just kind of ignored it, unless like you can look up compilation videos of K-pop artists like passing out on stage, like at like recent videos, not something that maybe happened 5-6 years ago and things have changed. No, I mean, like there are recent things where K-pop artists have passed out, haven't been able to perform and all these different things because they are so overworked. They do so much work, and that's why so many people can have so much content. You know what I mean? Like, people love K-pop for how much content you can get from them, but no one ever talks about the fact that they have to work so hard to give you all of that content. They are constantly working. And so like with the slave contracts, it's crazy. Like, these people say they get like 30 people, you know, sometimes a group can really be really big. So maybe like they have a group of 8 or 9 people. They might have 30 people in the dorm that are training for like 5 or 6 years. They don't just train for a little while. They train for 5-6 years and debut when they're like 17, 18, sometimes 16. And
they make the Matthew Knowles boot camp sound like kind of, you know, resort spa in Pee-wee Mexico. Camp. Like,
yes, yes. Yeah, it is definitely, Matthew Knowles cannot hold a candle to the K-pop trainees and what they go through. It's like, they don't see their families, you know, and a lot of times I think a lot of them come from poor families and stuff like that. So this is their kind of their way to kind of like get out of that life and provide for their families. A lot of them provide for their families. But I think that it's just, I don't know. It's like it rubbed me the wrong way. And that was another one of the reasons why I was kind of just, I kind of fell back from it. Because it's like, why is no one talking about the fact that this person has passed out twice in the last 3 days? And it was caught on camera. And, you know, this person is like hungry as hell and eats like a dog every time you see them on camera. Like they don't get fed often. I don't know. It's like, and it's clearly not like that all the time, and those are like isolated. Sometimes it's like an isolated incident, but it does happen. It has happened enough to where it's like, okay, somebody needs to kind of be talking about this. And there was once a documentary, and I think you can still find it on YouTube.
Yeah, I think I heard of it's on YouTube or Netflix.
Yeah, and like where someone went kind of like behind the scenes and showed. And I think this group that went through all of this stuff in this documentary was such like so much bad stuff, they didn't even end up debuting. And that's another thing. Like sometimes a whole group will end up not debuting. It's not like you don't get picked for the 9 slots. Sometimes the whole entire 30 people wasted 6 years of their adolescent years because the company decided you either weren't good enough or the market that you would have been in was oversaturated. Like they can up and decide that these last few years, you know, was a waste and you won't debut at all. And so, like you said, you have to just go find something to do with yourself after, you know, pretty much growing up with us or whatever. And it really is something that I think K-pop fans have like collectively agreed to just kind of ignore until something bad happens. And then it's like, oh, we need to talk about this, blah, blah, blah. But it's like, I don't know.
Nothing actually happened.
It's definitely something that, yeah, it makes you uncomfortable. It definitely makes you uncomfortable.
Do you think a lot of that, like, because that's, because I mean, one, okay, they're singing in Korean. So that's obviously out the gate, something that makes it different. For like an American audience, to all of this like blatant mistreatment of artists and also like just the problematic nature of some of the performances and like stuff like that. Do you think it's like one particular thing that's keeping these groups and artists from like bursting on the scene in the US, or is it just like the melting pot of all these things that's like people are like, I just can't get into it? Because they're like massive and doing so, so well abroad, but like have not really broken out over here. And it's just interesting to me.
They can come here and like tour. I've seen them come and do small tours and sell out those tours. But they really have a cult following. Like they won't get played on radio. It's not like Spanish music, where Spanish music can be played on radio, you know? There are more Spanish-speaking people in this country than Korean-speaking people, I'm sure. So that alone is what, like, kind of sets them apart from people from, you know, different languages that get played on American radio. So I think them being Korean is the number one factor. But also just the fact that, you know, there are those problematic things about the genre and the artists that I don't think people nowadays would accept. Like, there's no way that, like, a lot of, like, if you go to look back at, like, I'm going to use BTS as an example again. EXO as well, I think. You can go back to their earlier videos and I think they came out around 2009, 2010. They have braids in their hair. They're wearing, like, bandanas, baggy clothes. They're giving you, like, gangsta caricature. Like, it's bad. You know what I mean? And so watching it will make you cringe. And so clearly they don't dress that way anymore, but you still kind of get that, like, I'm going to give you a tough voice and throw my hands around and use AAVE. And it's like those things, it's like, I don't know if people would accept that. And so with it being Korean and also just the fact that there are so many things about it that you would kind of like turn your nose up at or like roll your eyes at, I don't think people outside of like the stan world would be willing to accept it for those two
but
reasons.
Like you mentioned, was it like BTS that has recently, like, they were at the AMAs and they've been doing this like really interesting press tour in the US. Like I saw one of their appearances on like Ellen or something. What the heck is going on with that? Like, why are they suddenly, because they've been around for a minute. I definitely have seen them referenced on like several of like the stans I follow who also are into K-pop groups. Like they're referenced all the time on the timeline. But like, what is it about right now that's making them pop in the US?
I think it's just the fact that these like companies, these award shows, these media, you know, outlets have realized how big their fan base is and the clicks that you get from writing about them, the views that you get from featuring them on your shows and things like that. It's like they were on, I want to say, they were either on Kimmel or Fallon. They were on Ellen. They performed at the AMAs. They were number one on iTunes for a few, like for a few days, I want to say. And that was all like last week.
That's crazy.
And I think it was because, I think it has a lot to do with the fact that American media has just caught on to the fact that they garner a lot of attention.
Interesting.
And regardless of if you really like respect the genre and respect the music or whatever, it doesn't really matter at that point. I think it just has a lot to do with the fact that I almost feel bad for them because I feel like they're using them and it'll be like, we're using you for views, clicks, whatever. Because I think they're going to be performing at one of the New York, the New Year's Eve shows or whatever. Like they're going to bring in the New Year's in America on TV where you have tons of, you know, millions of Americans watching them. You know what I mean? And so I just think that it's, I think, I honestly think they're being used. And I hate, it's sad because it's like, you know, they do work really hard and, you know, they do, they are passionate about it, but I do think they're being used.
I mean, the thing is, it like gets to a point, I feel like, where it's like, you scratch my back, I scratch yours. Like, okay, yes, we're being used and, you know, say what you will about that, but they're still getting this exposure, which may actually get them in front. I mean, like, these appearances they're making are being viewed by, like, millions of Americans. And so it's, like, it's this weird thing. I feel like it's happened with some American artists. Like, I feel like we've talked about it happening with, like, Fifth Harmony and stuff to, like, a certain level. Definitely. But I feel like even this is just, it feels like a completely different animal than what was happening with them. And so it's just
crazy. And I mean, like, I see, I mean, use the MTV account and the, I want to say like Z100 account on Twitter. Both of them constantly post about Fifth Harmony, right? None of them feature their music or content though. You know what I mean? And so it's like, yes, we do talk about you because we want your retweets, we want your clicks, we want your views, whatever. But at the end of the day, like, I can't, I don't think I'll ever hear K-pop on the radio. On American radio. I think that their exposure, I think there's a limit to the success that they can have here. I don't think that it can, like, a song can blow up like Despacito did. And so, yeah, I think there's just a limit. Like, yeah, they may be featured on TV specials and stuff, but like I said, you know, radio is like, even though radio is kind of like dying out, it's still the top thing. You want to be played on radio, especially if you're going to be a crossover artist from a different country or whatever. And so it's like, if you're not being played on radio, how, it's like your fans are like strictly online almost. You don't really have the GP, like people talk about, the general public. Like, you know, people talk about. So I don't know. It's just, I don't know. It would be cool, I guess, to hear K-pop on radio, but I just don't see it. I don't see
That's it. Interesting.
I think they're being used, and I feel bad for them, to be honest.
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing is, it's like, you know, I feel like symbolically, because America has made itself the center of the universe, it's like, if you can make it here, you make it anywhere. But, I mean, if we're really being honest with ourselves about what the reality is, like, they're killing it abroad and like in Asia, in Europe and everything, in ways that like we aren't always privy to, because again, we live in a country that puts itself first and wants to act like it's doing the best in everything. So at the end of the day, I feel like they don't even need the US audience, but it's just like a nice challenge to be able to say, hey, we did this well in the States, and like to be able to be like one of the first or like the only K-pop group to really break here. So I mean, I get it, but like trying to make it work here, but also I don't really think they need us at the end of the day.
Yeah, I mean, we are the biggest market, but like I think I want to say like France is close behind us, Germany is close behind us, and I'm sure they're doing great there.
Yeah,
and Japan, so psh, that's, you know, that's around the corner. So it's like, I know J-pop, I want to say, honestly, like, before we, like, go beyond, but I think, like, J-pop is, I heard of J-pop before K-pop. I never listened to it or whatever, But Japanese pop music, it's something that I like, the term J-pop, I've heard that before I even heard of K-pop. So, I mean, that industry might be even older. Mm-hmm. It's just that K-pop, for some reason, is what we have gotten in America and what has, you know, kind of like taken off online and stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, like Japanese pop, I've seen people do threads on how like old it is.
Interesting.
Like it goes back to people. I've seen a group back in like the early 2000s kind of look like a replica of B2K.
Wow.
I'm like, I didn't even know K-pop and J-pop and all that was around back then. I mean, they had the Omarion braids. They had the big belt buckles and tank tops. It was like Asian B2K. And so I didn't even realize it was that old, but I mean, I guess it's like, of course pop music existed back then. I guess just the formula, I didn't think it existed back then.
That's crazy to me, but you've definitely given me like a lot of homework now, because first of all I need to look into J-pop, but also like I do want to look more into K-pop like music. Like again, I feel like I've listened to like select tracks and groups. But
yeah,
we'll see. Hopefully I don't get too sucked into it, but I mean honestly, like,
even after listening to a lot of the music, I still only have maybe like 5 or 6 songs that I feel disrespectful when I try to sing along, because clearly I don't know what I'm saying. And so like sometimes I just make a noise and I'm like, I probably should not be doing that. But like, you know, so it's like, there are some times where I have to catch myself. I'm like, I probably should not be singing this like this. But it's like, you find yourself vibing to it and it's like, damn, I don't know what I'm saying, but this goes so hard. Like one of the songs that I really like, and if you're listening, I want y'all to go listen to it. It's called The Seven Sense by NCTU. Mm-hmm. And that is honestly like hands down one of the best K-pop songs I've ever heard. It is so good. It's like a really vibey song. It would be like, I'm trying to think of what I can compare it to Western wise. Because the one thing about a K-pop song to me is like I could always find something to compare it to from the Western world. So like, it's like it gives you the vibey feel like the new wave R&B artists we have. Who give you those kind of like hip hop, like trap and B sounds. That's what it's like. And it just vibes so well. And then they dance really well in the video. And they have a rapper who's saying, he has a really great flow. I don't really know what he's saying, but it works. And I love it. And so go listen to The Seven Sense. It's really good.
All right. I'm going to give it a try again and see if it sticks. And I'll keep y'all updated.
So guys, now we're going to get into our flops and faves of the week. And if this is your first time listening, it is our favorite thing and our least favorite thing of the week. And as always, I'm going to let you go first.
So I'm going to start with my flop real quick, just because it's very fast. But my flop is myself. Specifically, my flop is myself and how I treat my phone. Because I feel like this happens to me like every 8 months to a year. I make the mistake of like getting the cute phone case instead of the one that's actually going to protect your phone, and I drop it and it gets cracked. It's like there are people that I know, like a few of my family members who've had their phones for like 2 or 3 years at most, and they've never dropped it. It's perfect. They don't have a case on it. For some reason, like, I don't know what it is. It's probably because, like, my phone is literally glued to my hand. So it's, like, it's never in a pocket. Yeah. It's never in my purse. So I guess there's, like, more opportunities for me to drop it. But, like, it just happens way too often. And, like, currently I'm dealing with a phone that's completely not working. And I'm waiting for the new one to come in the mail. And it's just, like, killing me. I'm, like, annoyed with myself about it. But I'm gonna get a real phone case this time, and I'm not gonna forget how this feels, because it's now on the record how much I hate how this feels, and I'll just re-listen to this anytime I think about getting a cute phone case. So that's my flop, me and how I treat my phones. My fave is a show that I just binge-watched the first season of this show, and I just want to spread the gospel of it. It's called The Good Place. And it's a comedy that stars, it's on NBC, but I recently got into it on Netflix. It's been around, I think it premiered like fall 2016, but I feel like I blacked out that entire season because, you know, it was kind of hellish. So I didn't even remember it coming out, but it's called The Good Place. It's on NBC. It stars Kristen Bell, Ted Danson, Adam Scott from Parks and Rec is on it. Actually, the people who created the show, or the guy who created the show, Mike Schur, is the same guy who created Parks and Rec. So there's a lot of interesting, like, not crossovers, but like you can feel the world and I guess the whimsiness of Parks and Rec in The Good Place with some of the writing. But it's just like if you're looking for like a really good, funny and like heartwarming show, like something that's not going to leave you depressed afterwards, start watching this show. It's on Netflix. I think it's on Hulu as well. I'm going to get into the second season sometime soon. But it's just really funny. And the concept is like something you'd never, I don't want to like give too much away, but it's pretty much about the afterlife and like all the characters are dead. And that's all I'll say because like it just, it's such a smart show. And like the twist at the end of the first season is hands down like my favorite cliffhanger I've seen in years. Like it's just, it's so, so good. So yeah, watch the Good Place if you need something light and funny and smart. And you will not regret it. Like, I just want everyone to start watching this show. But yeah, so those are my faves and flops. Yeah, I would really love to hear your thoughts on it. So yeah, what are your flops and faves?
Yeah, so my flop and fave kind of go together. My fave is a good tribute performance. So I've been watching, it's another time where I get caught in a wormhole on YouTube. And pretty much I start watching videos and then I get into iconic tributes to, you know, music legends like Prince, Stevie Wonder, Diana Ross, you know, all the legends. And so my fave is really just the fact that back in the day, we used to get legends tributing other legends. And I don't know if people understood back then, like, how crazy that is. I watched a Chaka Khan tribute, and Stevie Wonder and Prince were a part of it. Like, can you imagine Stevie Wonder and Prince tributing you? And so that's my fave, just the fact that I love a really good tribute performance. I still think to this day, Fantasia was put on this earth to do tributes, period. She has amazing original music, but she was put on this earth to do tributes. Yeah, so a good tribute performance is my favorite, my fave this week. My flop this week is a bad tribute performance.
Tell us about it. Tell us about it, because I already know what you're going to say.
So I just watched the Soul Train Awards this past weekend. And so Toni Braxton got the like Lady of Soul Award, I think. I want to say that's the award she got, but I think SWV got that award. I don't know. They, two like legends were honored that night. And so Toni Braxton actually got the tribute performance though. And so who they got Jessie J, Luke James, and Ro James to sing for her tribute performance. So here's the thing. When I think of a Toni Braxton tribute performance, those are not at the people all. I think of. Like, at all. Like, there's so many, well, not so many, but there are a few other people that I think of when I think of Toni Braxton and maybe like someone who could do a tribute for her. I think of maybe like Jasmine Sullivan. Her voice is so deep, you know, like Toni Braxton. That was literally her thing. The fact that her voice is so deep and rich. Jasmine Sullivan was the number one person. I'm like, I know she was available. Right. Well, let me not try to play my girl. She might've been booked. Who knows? But so like, you know, I just, those just are not the three people I think of. So the thing about it was the tribute wasn't terrible. It just was not the tribute I think Toni Braxton deserved. I really love that she got up and performed herself. I think that was my favorite part about it, though. Just the fact that, okay, y'all sang three little songs for me, but at the end of the day, I'm going to get up and sing for myself. I'm going to do a self-tribute. That was such a Toni Braxton thing to do. But I think that I came to the realization while I was watching that, that we are not going to get awesome tributes for the 90s singers that we grew up on. Like, these people have been in the game like 20 plus years. They're at the point where it's time for them to get their tribute performances, to get their lifetime achievement awards and things like that. But do we really have the vocalists to tribute these people? I mean, these are people who were known for vocals. Mm. Vocals kind of went out the window in the early 2000s, late, you know, 2010s and stuff. But in terms of like vocals, do we really have people that can give our faves good tribute performances? So my flop this week is just the fact that I came to that realization that I might not be pleased with tribute performances for like the rest of my life. And that is so depressing.
I honestly was not actively thinking about it, but now I'm just as sad, because not only are you like, first of all, we're going to get to a point where it's like, who the fuck are you even tributing? You know,
right,
but like right now we're just at a point like, really, like, that's where we're gonna go to, like, to get this tribute done? Like, it just, ugh. I totally co-signed this.
Yeah, I mean, it started, I mean, one of the most iconic, like, bad tribute performances was Trey Songz when he did the tribute performance for Prince, and Prince was in the audience, and they panned the camera to him, and he was very, like, displeased.
The one with, A-Marie, Rihanna, and Tierra Marie was not the worst one for Destiny's Child. At the World Music Awards.
It was... okay, you're right. That one was bad, too. But I liked them at the time. And I think because it was a group of them, it wasn't as bad. But Trey Songz was isolated on that stage at the BET...
Yeah, that's
like at a
crazy.
BET
that is
event.
Crazy.
And Prince was visibly, like, not moved by it at all. He was actually looking into the camera, like... The office, like, is this, are y'all serious?
The fact that he even showed up, because you know they told him who's going to tribute him before. Bless him for even showing
and
up, because that's disrespectful as fuck. Like, Trey Songz has bops, but come on. Come the fuck on. The only person that should be allowed to do Prince tributes is Miguel, in my opinion.
Yes, I wholeheartedly agree with that. But, so I think my flop this week is just the realization that we're not going to get really great tribute performances. Like, BET is gonna do something stupid, like get Bryson Tiller to sing for a Jodeci tribute or something. I'm gonna be pissed and I'm gonna like throw my TV into the wall. And like, it's like, but who else will they get at this point? You know? So yeah, that's my flop. It's just a sad realization that so many icons and legends will not get a great tribute performance. But yeah.
Flops and faves.
So sorry to end the show on a sad note,
okay.
Guys.
We'll go back and watch those good tribute performances.
Those grainy tribute performances on YouTube. Oh, yes.
All right.
Y'all, another episode.
In the can. We did it.
In the can. Yes.
Shout out to our favorite DJ in the entire world, Dion.
Yes.
She produces the music that you hear at the beginning and end of every single episode. You can follow her on both Twitter and SoundCloud at Your Girl DJ Magic. Follow everything that she's doing. And like I said before, if you're in DC or Atlanta, hit her up. Get you a DJ for your holiday party. And like, make
book
sure
her.
It's, yes, book her. Because she will stay booked and you'll be sad that you didn't get a chance to have it. So. Hit her up.
And if you want to follow us on Twitter, you can follow the show at The Fan Podcast, and you can follow our personal Twitters. They'll be in the description box below. And yeah, thank you guys
for
listening.
Thank you so much. We appreciate y'all for holding it down and coming back every time we pop up in your feeds. It's like, it always warms my heart.
It's so crazy that y'all haven't abandoned us.
I know. Y'all even tweet us when pop culture things happen and like y'all want to get our opinions.
Yes.
And that just makes me really, really happy. So y'all are the best. Thank you.
We appreciate it, y'all.